Hello and welcome to The Conversation with me, Amanda Decadney. This episode is the first of my special series about the men, where I talk to men about their lives and the complexity of modern masculinity. On today's episode, I have an amazing conversation with an icon of modern masculinity, actor Matthew McConaughey. He's out with a companion workbook to his best-selling memoir, Green Lights. I started our conversation by asking him some of the questions that he asks of his readers in the Green Lights workbook. A warning to listeners, in this interview, we discuss mature topics, including sex and Matthew's personal experience of being sexually assaulted. Here's our conversation. Okay, I'm going to ask you some questions from your new workbook, companion to your memoir, Green Lights. The first one is, are you a trust first or trust last person?
I'm a trust first person. It's, I go into any situation. I'm coming into this situation. You and I are just meeting. Before you even tell me we have a mutual friend, I'm coming in with 100% trust, 100% reverence that you're going to be good at what you do, that you're going to mean what you say, that you're going to not necessarily have my best interest in mind, but we're going to have an honest conversation, that you're not going to be sneaky, untrustworthy, trying to screw me over, blah, 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 blah. Now, I've got another little fox over here that is listening for things, and it measures in time when anybody I first meet or any place I first go, that can lower that from 100% trust. But I go and trust high first.
That's incredible.
I look at projects I do. People, the thing is, even myself, no one ever, including myself, ever hits the mark of my trust level at entrance level. Everyone comes in under the mark. It's only human. I've never made a movie that was as good as I imagined it would be. I've never met somebody that actually lived up to the reverence that I held for them going in. I've never lived up to my own expectations of things every time I go approach something. I always come in under the mark. But I find that I think the mark's higher because I went in with 100% trust. I hit a higher mark than if I'd have gone in with the low trust and not and let it gradually rise.
Well, it's interesting because I think people do respond to how you treat them initially, right? And if we treat people with trust, then the hope is that they will behave in that way until, and of course, there's the antenna for like, all right, is this how I think it is? But yep. I loved that question because a lot of people are trust lost. So let's do another one. When have you succeeded because you've out-hustled someone with more talent?
Well, it's happened a bunch. I'm trying to... It's happened in work a bunch. It's happened in my career where, I don't know. I mean, someone else had proven they had more talent, I think, maybe than me. But I kept knocking on the door. I took enough. No. Yeah. No, we said no. And then I got picked because the powers that be, those people on the line that we didn't know were listening, were like, who's the guy that just keeps coming back?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, we've got the bird in hand, but they're kind of sitting back going, well, of course you picked me.
Yeah.
But this guy keeps coming back and he's pretty damn good at what he does, but he's a Charlie Hustle.
The hustle tenacious. Guy.
Yeah. And you got to watch it because you can turn into be, you can tell someone that and they can think it means, well, just go be an absolute pain in the ass.
Right. There's a fine line. Read the room.
Read the room. Yeah.
Okay. I'm going to ask you one more. Is what I want what I need? What is your experience of getting what you want but learning it's not what you need?
Oh, geez. Well, look, first of all, where what we want is what we need, where if you are religious or not, that's, to use the term heaven, that's heaven on earth, I think.
Yes.
You know, we have desires. We're passionate animals. We want certain things. Now, when were those matched with, that's actually what I needed. That actually fed me for tomorrow. It gave me, it enriched me. I ate a healthy meal because it made me feel better tomorrow. I tended to this relationship, my wife or my children. And it was, I enjoyed it, but it also was good for me. Mm-hmm. That's the one.
That's the lineup, isn't it? When those two can sync up.
Which is not always easy, because a lot of times, what do? I know what I need to do, but I don't want to do it. Well, I know what I want to do, but I'm going to have a hangover tomorrow because I don't need to. Well, your question was, what's the last time I wanted something that I did not need?
Mm-hmm. Like last night.
Yeah. I mean, the third one, you know, wanted it. Did I need it? No, but I damn sure wanted it. And then, you know, in the words of the great Pedro Almodovar, the Spanish director, we were eating at a great restaurant in Spain one day, and they brought up French fries covered in melted cheese with all these great fried eggs on top of it. And the guest that I had brought was a real sort of very nutritionalist guy. And he was looking at that going, oh my gosh, this is, I'm not sure I should eat that.
That is not good for my internal tract.
Right, death on a plate. Yeah. And then Pedro leans over, the sensualist he is, and he goes, the pleasure is good for you. I was like,
but
yes,
that's true.
It is true.
That is true, right? So sometimes those things that you want, that you don't know that you need them, but actually the experience of them, the pleasure of it is what you need.
Yep, 100%.
See, these are your questions. We started with your questions and I loved them so much. I just wanted to open with that.
Cool.
So you wrote a lot about trauma in your book and you wrote about a lot of things, and you don't even really label it trauma, but you talked about a lot of childhood experiences that for me, I was surprised when I read them. Some of them specifically were to do with violence between your mom and your dad, and that your mom broke your dad's nose and that your dad broke your mom's finger and that your brother and your dad got into, you know, physical fights. And when I read that, I thought, I wonder if you've been in therapy. And then I also started researching, and people were really shocked by those stories. The world was pretty shocked. So I'm curious whether you were surprised at how shocked people were reading about some of your family interactions.
No, I wasn't shocked. I had a hunch that, you know, that was going to be, wait, what? Well, you know, you call right now, you want to go, what do you call it? You want to go back and prorate the situation. You're calling, you read that situation, you're calling CPS, you're calling child protection.
Well, now we are, but you know, then it was also different, by the way, you know.
It was then different, and my mom and dad were uniquely different. Like my mom, she to this day at 90, just left her having a cup of coffee. She would tell you to your face, no, that's what I needed to communicate. She needed that kind of resistance. She wanted that. She doesn't regret a minute of it. And she started all those fights with my dad. That middle finger of hers that's broke is not broke because my dad reached out and broke it. It's broke because my mom would bang him on the head and he'd go, Katie, stop it. Stop it. Bam, bam.
But maybe she wanted it. Maybe she wanted it and she didn't need it.
She would say she needed it.
What do you think she needed from that?
Look, my mom to this day, whatever, if a conversation's going smooth for more than 10 minutes, she's going to throw a wrench in it just to jackknife the situation because it's going too smooth. Come on, spice this up.
Right. She needs, that's her nature.
She came from, you know, I write about it. I don't know if I wrote about it in this book. I'm writing about it now, but this, how we sometimes to learn who we are, what we want to do, or our own identity. It starts not with, oh, I know what I want to be. It starts with, let me push away what I don't want to be.
Yes.
Now, my mom turned out to be a great mother to me and my two brothers. She had no mother. She had a mother that was jealous of her, that hated her, despised her. She didn't know how to be a good mom. She just basically said, well, what am I going to do? I'm going to do the 180 degree opposite of what my freaking mom did. And so she just didn't know what to do. Just said, I'm going to do everything the opposite of her. She needs that. And that's part of her communication.
Does she need conflict?
Yeah, she definitely needs conflict. My mother is still 90 years old, young and flying because she's taken the path of most resistance.
So are you like your mom at all? Have you experienced yourself as inheriting traits from your mom that you're like, hang on, I love my mom. My mom is awesome, but I've got this trait of hers that I don't want to bring that into my family life. Have you experienced that?
Well, yeah. I mean, there's quite a few. I've tried to update the ILS. You know, I'm all with the values and everything that my mom, I think my mom and dad were wonderful mothers and fathers and really in what they taught us. How they went about it, I don't choose to practice the same way. It's just, I don't know. I just looking for in a more evolved way, and not in any way judging what they did is wrong.
Of course, yeah.
For me. But also I'm saying I'm someone who, if I have to raise my voice, I immediately catch myself and go, what did you not handle to get to the point where you even had to raise your voice? Let's go back and pick up those crumbs. So mm-hmm. My mom, to raise your voice was part of the daily, hey, it was more different than Italians, but it was part of the daily, it's what you do. And what do you mean? And to even today, she'll raise her voice. My mom will. And the kids are like, and we're like, they've got to know it now. That's just how Mom Max speaks. That's
right.
Just
they're not used to that, because that's not how you and your wife are, I'm assuming, with them.
No, but my mom's been living with this for 2.5 years. So they've gotten to see and hear. And my mom,
you're lucky your wife is that cool that your mom has been living with you for 2.5 years.
Oh, yeah.
I can tell you, I'm married for 20 years, and I can tell you that I would not be having my mother-in-law living with me for 2.5 years. Your wife is something else.
My wife is making some unsaid sacrifices for doing that. We did it because of COVID. And then, what else? There's another cool thing my wife did. My wife says, your mom's 90. We know people like to want us to remain as relevant as they can as they get older. She's invited mom into being like her co-host with her Women of Today site. And so my mom goes on. She got her into HEB commercials. And looking at comments online going, oh, they said, oh, nice. So my mom feels
included,
relevant. Yeah. And I get to go and up with makeup and put on dress to come down.
Oh, that's so beautiful. Giving her purpose. Cool.
Yeah.
Have you done any therapy at all?
No.
Why did you choose not to do therapy?
I mean, I didn't.
Have you had mentors? Like
yeah, for sure.
Because a lot of people don't have this level of self-reflection on their own. And certainly, looking at how you grew up, I'm surprised that there are not more areas that have held you back.
Yeah. Yep.
And that is someone who's not inside how you were raised, but just from reading what you said. So most of us, I mean, look, I was in juvie at 15, and I've had mentors my whole life, because I also had a really, if you were to read my childhood, you'd be like, well, this girl's turned out all right, given how she grew up. Right. But I've always had mentors so that I've learned how to be able to process a lot of the stuff and kind of make sense of a lot of the stuff. So I'm wondering what that has looked like for you, because you definitely have a self-awareness and a self-reflection that I am surprised to hear you haven't done any therapy. What has been your modalities for healing, if you will?
I've had very good friends. I've had good mentors. I've had elder men, elder women, married couples that pulled it off from celebrating 50-year anniversaries that have taken the time to sit with me. My father and mother, where the messenger and the message did not meet, is revealed a lot of times when we lose a father and mother. My dad died. A lot of those, the message you were sending, you weren't necessarily backing up as the messenger. What happens when that happens? You get resentful. You son of a bitch, why you were lying? And then all of a sudden, if you're lucky, which I think I was, I go, oh, no. That doesn't mean they meant it any less. Can I take that? They were just wanting me to be a little bit better than they were. And so I never quit believing in the things that my mom and dad were teaching me in the middle of finding out that, oh, maybe they were hypocritical about what they were teaching and what they were actually doing.
But a lot of people would actually not listen to the message if the walk wasn't being talked.
Yeah, but that's just, I mean, are you a parent?
Yeah, I've got 3 kids.
Okay. Do we walk the walk of everything we talk?
No.
100%? No way.
No, but what I'm saying is that a lot of people aren't able to receive the message if the messenger isn't walking the talk. So what I'm saying is, again, you're quite unusual in that regard.
Yeah, but I believe in that. But I I believe in being able to make the word incarnate and see, and it's I still, even the reasons I looked up to things that my parents taught me that I may have found out they didn't practice then, that they were just saying, I never quit believing in that.
Right.
And you know, it is what happens. We're getting older. Mm-hmm. That's part of the creep, is you start to go, the message and the messenger start to get a little bit bigger gap. And you try to, what can you hang on to? And then what do you go, damn it, they'll forgive me. We're human. They'll understand. I mean.
But how did you fill in the gaps?
Look, my parents when I talk about how they communicated, and there was even physical violence. And we talked about how we were raised and there was corporal punishment. My parents were like, this is how you better do it when you have kids. Mm-hmm. They're like, this is how we do it. We're not putting this on you, saying, you know, my parents wouldn't let us be grounded because that was taking away our time, and time is your most valuable asset. There's some logic to that.
That's true.
At the same time, I'm like, well, we pick out times to take away our kids' time and figure that a grounding or go to your room is a better choice than, you know, a spanking or something. I mean, my mom's there. She sees that. She doesn't go, oh my gosh, what are you doing? That doesn't work. She's there going, that's your way.
Right. And whatever worked for her, you know, 30, 40 years ago, she may not make those choices today. Who knows? Maybe she would. I don't know. Who knows?
Not. Well, she's around grandkids now. You know, things, they soften up when they get around grandkids.
They do. They do. You wrote in your book about being blackmailed at age 15 into having sex, and also mm-hmm. that you were drugged and molested at 18. In the back of a van.
Australia.
Are you comfortable talking about this? Could I ask you a couple of questions?
You can ask me whatever you want to ask me. I don't know if I'll answer it. There's very deliberate reasons why I didn't go into details on those two stories.
That's fine.
Which I'd love to predicate this discussion with it. I knew, being McConaughey, celebrity, etc., that if I would have gone into details of those two stories, that quotes from those details would have been the headline.
You're absolutely right. Yeah. And the book would have been about that, and it's not about that. Yeah.
You know, and I said, because that's not what the book's about. Yeah. But anyway, yeah. So,
well,
ask whatever.
Yeah. First of all, I wanted to thank you for talking about that, because many men are reluctant to talk publicly about their experience of sexual assault. And so I wanted to thank you, because a lot of men are sexually assaulted, and there's an extra level of shame and stigma attached to men who speak about it. So thank you.
You're welcome.
How did you know what was right?
Well, I'd been taught from and guided by my parents about respect for a woman, respect for the relationship, respect for sexual intimacy, mm-hmm. Respect for space, respect that my dad had always had this thing when he taught us the birds and the bees. He sat me down and taught me the birds and the bees. And he said, you know, you're getting that age, you've kissed me. I'm like, yes, sir. And he goes, well, it's going to go further than that one day. Probably going to go, you know, to where you're going to get intimate, and there's going to be the breast. And then there's going to be below the belt, I'm paraphrasing. And he goes, and it's going to happen to you as well. And so he goes, and he's talking to me as his son, as a male in the situation, and speaking to me about a heterosexual relationship. He says, if you ever feel the girl, the female, hesitate, stop.
Wow, he taught you about consent.
Stop. And he even said this. He goes, you may even feel them hesitate. And then after you stop, they may go, oh, no, no, no. Come on. Don't.
Wow.
Wait till next time. And he was right. I got in circumstances where it was like, no, no, no. Okay, I'm out. And then saying, okay, cool, I'm out. The girl went, oh, well, no, come on. And I was like, no, 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 no. And he said, just live. He goes, trust you'll have another day if it's to be.
What incredible advice.
But I was very clear. Again, that was not right. That was not cool. That was not the way it is. So
you had that internal barometer.
After that, I got to have some healthy sexual relations and have girls that I liked and liked me. And we slowly got intimate, and it was beautiful and clumsy and all those things that
it
can be.
As it's supposed to be.
But it wasn't ugly. like that was.
Like when you were 15. And then when you were 18, it sounds like there was another awful experience being drugged and molested. 3 years later, you probably thought, I can't believe this is happening to me again.
I didn't connect them.
Oh.
I didn't connect them.
Historically, when you look at someone that's had, the way trauma does impact people is they do go out in the world, and often every time they see a van or a van, that, or even a car that's the same color or someone with the same color hair or the same stature, they have a visceral response. I'm so curious as to why you and how you've been able to metabolize these situations. You're somewhat of an anomaly to me, and I'm really interested by it.
I don't have a rocket science answer. It wasn't an option.
Mm.
I love life too much and believe in life and believe in people. As I said, I still go trust first. I have my spider senses and my sirens, but I was like, no way am I going through life. Uh-uh. And did a thought like that creep in my mind ever? I get sure. And I was like, uh-uh. Bullshit. That's fiction, McConaughey. Do not think of that.
Mental discipline.
It wasn't an option. So I'm not going through life to go be afraid because of that instance. I'm not going to be afraid of relationships because my first experience was blackmail. Uh-uh. That's an aberration. No, that's not the way it is. And if I go on and I'm not going to let it beat me, that was another thing. It was competitive, I think. Mm. I'm not going to let that beat my sense of trusting people and saying, no, I can
your
have a
spirit. Your spirit, you're ultimately not talking about not letting your spirit be destroyed.
Not negotiable. No.
Huh.
Happened. Am I denying it that it happened? No, not denying it happened. It happened. Ugly. Ugh. Still get, even telling you the story, I guess. But am I going to carry that? And I chose, no, not non-negotiably. I'm not going to carry that, bring that baggage into the life I'm going to lead.
Mm-hmm.
And how I treat people and how I trust people and how I look at the circumstance, at the risk I may take. It was an aberration. I'm not saying it'll never happen again. You're going to run into some other shit, McConaughey. You're going to get some other pickles, but damn it, let's go.
How do you talk to your kids and educate them about safety in the world? Because as someone who, you know, I was sexually assaulted at 15, and my kids are now 15. I have 15-year-old twins, and now they're starting to go out into the world, right? And they want to kind of go out without me and go on the subway or go on the bus or go to the friend's house or whatever. And I find my experience as a 15-year-old, having been assaulted, definitely coming up a lot in what I'm comfortable with them doing. So I'm wondering if you've had any of that experience, and or how do you talk to your kids about being about safety and taking care of themselves in the world?
Yep. You know, we as parents go, how's it different from when I was there? Where are we? We tend to think, I don't know if we're even right or not, that it's happening more. How? I don't know.
Well, we know more about it because of social media.
We know more about it. We get more about it in the media, so we definitely feel like it may be happening more, but I don't, you know. We start off by trying to teach our kids respect of their own space and their own bodies, their own minds, what they listen to, what they put in their body, what they allow someone to do, or if you feel it. And you know how it is. You don't want it to be oversensitive because it may just be the kid joshing around. Let's wrestle.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? You don't want, it's that old thing about, like, you know, don't let your kids talk to strangers. Well, wait a minute. I can't purchase that.
I've had some of the best conversations in my life with strangers.
With strangers.
Oh,
my
God.
At the same time.
There's something to it.
At the same time, you go, you're walking home from school. You don't get in the car with somebody. You don't know. People will try to tempt you with things that kids like. You know, sweets, candy, fun over here. No, you got to stay in your own zone and say, no, thank you. If you are uncomfortable, first verbally let the first be in public as much as possible. Get out on the proverbial playground. These predators out there, they are out there. Don't be afraid of the dark. That's not what I'm saying. Just try to be aware. And that's part of what we're still trying to do. Mine are 13, 12, 9. We're still teaching them awareness. own your body, your steps, and your space. Mm-hmm. Don't be, because we're huggers too.
Oh, I'm a big hugger.
We're huggers, we're wrestlers, and all this stuff. So it's not like, oh, that I'm uncomfortable, you know. And then you want to hear a really funny one?
Yes, tell me a funny one.
Okay, this is really funny. Take my son. We're in Boston. Put him in baseball camp. I think he's like 7 or 8. And the talks of those had kind of begun of watch out, understand your body and your private parts. My son comes back from the baseball camp. He's quiet all the way to the ride home. We're like, what's going on? He's like, finally, we get him to tell us. He goes, well, I just had a real uncomfortable situation today. And I was like, what was it? One of those? He's like, yeah. I was running off the field. One of the other players came over and slapped me on the boom boom. We were like, ah, that's what baseball players do. You get a slap on the butt. That was not one of those. And so we all had a good laugh about it. But again, it was a.
But he was aware.
Yeah. So.
Because things can go too far in the other direction where you get this kind of, you know, overprotectiveness, right? Yeah. And then your kids, you're instilling fear in them, which we don't want to do. And then everything sort of tips into this incredibly PC world that is homogenized and there's no freedom of expression. And so it's a fine line. As a parent, I find it a really fine line because I want my kids to express themselves and I want them to have great conversations with strangers on the subway. You know, and I want them to explore and to be curious. And I want them to be able to say things, you know, that they don't know aren't, you know, PC. Like, I want them to be able to express themselves. And yet we're living in a world where it's really hard to be able to fuck up and make mistakes because sometimes the cost is too high.
Look, we're going to find our waterline as humanity of where our sensitivity and common sense can meet here and what real progress is. It's not saying yes to everything. We know it as parents. You know, the male in the male kid in 1980s, 70s, we didn't have, we weren't taught to have women's favorite women superheroes.
Well, by the way, here's the other thing. In growing up in the 70s, I was explaining this to my son, that for a boy growing up in the 70s, if he wanted to see a naked woman, he had to go to a magazine stand and be, you know, have enough balls or be brave enough to say, can I have that on the top shelf and get it put in a bag, a brown paper bag, right, and walk home. And that's where he could look at it. And I was like, yeah. You've grown up with access to, you know, a really distorted perspective of what a naked woman looks like just on your phone. So I was explaining this to him and it made me think about, you know, do you think it's obviously so different for boys growing up today? You have a son. I have a son and I'm navigating a growing young man in today's culture. But how do you navigate that with your own son? How do you navigate what it's like to be a boy growing into a young man in 2022?
Well, look, just coming on 13, we're about to get into those, some specific things that are of masculinity. So far, it's been character, respect for self, respect for others. As far as anything with sexual orientation, we try to, and there's a lot of ugly stuff, like I said, it just pops up on a phone or comes through something. And I don't know, but you got to think, man, those images,
they imprint.
Are imprinted.
They are. So my son has told me that.
That imprint doesn't become
a thing.
My getting blackmailed at 15 because that's my idea, or seeing porn for the first time and being introduced to sex through porn or pornographic image rather than a loving relationship and seeing art and understanding the beauty of a woman's body and the beauty of your own body. And ultimately they're there to procreate, but sensualities, that sensitive, the pleasure that two people can give each other and care for each other in a sexual relation.
And that dialogue is crucial for mothers and fathers to have with their sons and daughters. And, you know,
well, we've got to have it. Because if we leave it up to the rest, we leave it up to the world of the internet to teach them, they're going to be, and they're all, people are already.
How I addressed it with my son, I said, look, you know how there's all kinds of movies like rom-coms, horror movies, documentaries are real, horror movies aren't. I was like, porn is not real. It's not real. Okay, this is not what a woman's body often looks like. This is not how sexual intimacy looks like. A man doesn't often look like this or do things like this. You know, there's a whole, it's like a horror movie. It's made up. It's a, not a real life experience. And he understood that when I framed it like that.
How old is he?
He's now 15, but I started having that conversation with him at like 10 or 11.
And so did he get that it's, do you think that, okay, but mama, it's virtual?
Or yes.
It's just another genre that of a movie I don't want to go spend the time in? Did you get into the,
well,
the
I
yay
didn't,
or nay?
I right, didn't, or the, no, because I didn't want to create any shame around it because inevitably there is a curiosity.
Yep.
And so I said, look, you're going to have a curiosity and your friends are going to show you stuff. And I just want you to know it's totally natural to have to be curious about it. But I want you to understand what it is that you're seeing. Often the women are denigrated in ways that you would never do to a woman. And I want you to also know that, because that is the truth.
Yeah. Yeah. We've had that conversation about that shit's not, it's not nice. It's not how you treat somebody. How you treat somebody. Again, going back to just character, because again, mine are 13, 12, and 9. To sit there and say that, you know, they see how their example, best example of how a man treats a woman is watching me, how I treat their mother.
100%. 100%.
And they see that. And their best example of how a woman treats a man is seeing how their mother, Camilla, treats me. We haven't really gone into saying to them, hey, that thing you saw, they haven't so far, as far as I know, seen that. But I know that, you know, there was an image that came up in conversation. And we're like, had the conversation again, the curious feeling. What was the feeling? Don't want you to feel bad about the feeling, because you probably had a natural feeling. You know, as a parent, you're trying to hold on to trying to be stay neutral so they can be honest with
exactly.
you.
Exactly.
And you hear the feeling, you go, okay. And you go, well, that's a real feeling, but that to treat someone with what that image, kind of the innuendo of what that image meant can be mean, because don't know, because anytime two people are going to get together anyway, it needs to be consensual to go back. That means you both want it, you want to give, you want to receive, you want to receive, you want to give, and you want it to be, yeah. And does that mean it's going to be perfect? No, that can still be awkward. It'll still be weird on the day. You'll still get nervous. It's supposed to be. You're gonna have butterflies. It's going to be clunky.
That's how it's supposed to be.
That's the other thing. The other version is, you show these, you know, the media shows the perfect lovemaking, and then that puts people in a bind. They compare themselves to that. It's never like that.
Matthew, you need to make sure that when you do sex scenes in whatever projects you've got coming up, that you can show some of those really realistic, awkward situations. It's not really leading man material, but it should be.
Yeah.
It should be.
There's always room for comedy.
What do you think of some of the male role models that are presented in American media?
Father. My middle brother, Pat, was my hero until I was about 17. My pastor's a really good mentor of mine. I've got a group of other men that are a little older than me.
That's so valuable. Intergenerational storytelling is so valuable.
Got to have it. We got to have it and pass it down. And again, I've got kids 13, 12, and 9. I've seeked out role models that their kids are in their 20s. They're out. They successfully went out and into the world and are doing okay. That's people I look up to, fathers I look up to, because I'm still in the middle of it. I think we're doing a pretty good job. But the ones that have had lost a couple here recently. I'm really kind of in one of those seasons where some of my role models are dying. It's getting to be that time. They're like, they lived to be 80 and they died. And you're like, when did that happen?
And you get to learn about death and about loss and about loving people as they transition. And that's another whole gift they're giving you on the way out.
Yep. 100%. 100%. There's another love story with death that we're afraid to look in the eye. All of us. It can deliver so many of us. I write about in a book, my father's death was one of the great deliverances I've ever had.
And by the way, it's the only guarantee, isn't it? That's the only guarantee.
The only one-way ticket we got.
And people don't want to talk about it. I'd like to talk about it a lot with people because I think it's the only thing that for sure is going to happen. So let's be prepared as much as we can and get the stigma off of death.
And you know what it does? Helps you start living a hell of a lot better, having a lot better.
So true. So 100%. True. Okay. I want to end this with a series of questions that I do. Is there anything else that you want to say, that you want to talk about before we move into these sort of end questions?
Well, I want to ask you, what do you think? Because I've been asked a lot about, you know, I'm deemed as masculine. People say like, oh, well, you're very masculine. But I've never thought of, maybe I did in younger years as any testosterone filled adolescent would feel, but I've never thought of masculine. Masculinity is very important.
Mm-hmm. It is.
Macho's not.
Right.
But toxic masculinity that leans sometimes into synonymizing with there's a machoism, that's just child's play when it comes to masculinity. It's not the real thing. And I've had some people come to me and go, look, through your book, Green Lights, you kind of let me know that self-reflection is masculine. You let me know that to write something down in a journal, pretty fucking cool. Didn't lose any of your balls doing that. Actually gained some. That delayed gratification's cool. And at the same time that you remind me that being conscientious is kind of cool, you reminded me that having a damn good time is also very important. You didn't play all angel or lean into just all devil with me. You said, and look, we don't want to emasculate our men. That'd be a disservice to, biggest disservice that would probably be is to women to do that. And I'm curious, and I ask you the question, who are some males that you look at and you go, that's badass. That's the male. That's the kind of male I want my son to look up to.
I can't really point to many men and say that is a guy that I would like my son to role model or to learn from or to pay attention to. I would say Barack Obama is someone who, you know, a lot of people point to him. I think he, you know, has a relationship with his wife that is loving and reciprocal and respectful. He's a leader in a compassionate and kind way. He's dealt with really hard things, but with, you know, as much grace and dignity that we've been privy to. So he's definitely one. But when I look at kind of popular culture and someone that my son may look up to, I find it really hard to find examples. And I wish that wasn't the case, but it is the case.
Part of it, whether we find those for our children or not, as you mentioned it earlier, elder males have to pass it down to the next generation, and the storytelling has to go down. The time-tested and new definitions of masculinity that will stand the test of time have to be translated. Because I find out so often that it's not somebody trying to be different. They're just going like, oh, I didn't know.
Exactly.
Oh, I had no idea. Oh, you didn't? Oh, geez, I thought you knew and you were just choosing different. There's like, no, I just didn't.
No one got the guidebook. And I feel I am a big believer in the power of storytelling in any medium. It's why I interview people, because I really do believe in the power of shared experience, shared knowledge, and passing it on. Because we don't know who's going to listen to the stories that you've told today. And that is going to be the moment that they hear something and they get a piece of wisdom, a nugget of guidance that they really needed. That's how it's been for me. And so that's why I'm so committed to creating a space, especially for men to share stories, because I do think, as you said, masculinity is in a very precarious situation, and it clearly can't stay the way that it was, but it hasn't got a roadmap of where to go. And I want to hear from men, because I want us to collectively try to work out what that roadmap is. Thank you. Thanks for asking me a question. Okay, I'm going to do these last little ones for you, okay? This is a little section that I just do at the end. Okay. What embarrasses you?
Not being prepared.
What is the kindest thing someone has ever done for you?
Oh, I mean, I had a kind one this morning.
What was it?
I was in, it was actually yesterday morning. I was gonna get up. Then I wanted to sleep a little bit longer, and the stage were cracked, and Camilla had come up to bring me some tea. And she saw that I was still asleep because she thought I was gonna be up, thought I'd have my tea. But she just kind of went over very quietly without saying anything. Just kind of shut those shades for me to take that light off. Put the lid on the Yeti so the tea would still be warm when I did get up. And there it was when I woke up. And boy, I can get a day started like that. Mm. I'm catching green eyes.
You really are. Do you ever cry?
Yes, about once a week.
What's the last thing you cried about?
Oh, I don't cry at death. I cry at birth. I get a story the other day. I'm watching a documentary about a man that was incarcerated wrongly. Mm. And he got out of jail. That's like birth. Ah, man, another chance. I cry usually once a week, when also just on ritual wise in church, when I'm praying and I'm going through my inventory of the people I care about in my life. And I'm going through that Rolodex of snapshots until I find a snapshot of them that is how I saw them, as their most true self, not as their happiest or their most solemn, but just as their true self, where they weren't advertising, had no mask on. And I lock on a snapshot and I pray for more of that for them. And then I go through my list of friends and loved ones. And then I got to come to the, you know, who do I got to get a snapshot of now to pray for, be thankful for?
You.
A lot of times I got to go through that Rolodex longer to find that shot of me than I do for my loved ones. But if I can find it, hold on to it, look at it without trying to see it, that usually brings me to tears.
That's the hardest one, isn't it? Ourselves.
Yeah.
Yeah. How do you navigate your career and being a present father?
Yeah. Well, you know, that wonderful wife we were talking about earlier, before we ever had children, when we wanted to pull the goalie, she said, came to me one night, put both hands on my shoulders, looked me in the eyes. She goes, okay, one condition. I said, yes, ma'am. She says, you go, we go. My selfish mind of the guy who always goes off to work and stays in the Airstream by myself with the dog and doesn't ever go out. I'm like, I don't, in my mind, I'm going, I don't know. I mean, geez, I've got a whole family coming. I'm not sure if I'm going to be able to be the artist that I can be. And as I'm saying this, I hear the voice of my mother. She's not even in the same state I'm in, but I hear this going, like, boy, you say yes, ma'am, right now. Thank you. And I went, yes, ma'am. Thank you. And it's like, so what's happened is when I go to work for an extended amount of time, the most we've ever been apart from each other, me and my children or me and my wife, is 9 days in 15 years. Not
That's
nine
phenomenal.
Total, nine total days in a row. So when we go, we pack up traveling McConaughey's and we go.
The traveling McConaughey's. I love it.
Yeah. So I get to say, I get to get my kisses goodbye in the morning, maybe some breakfast, and I get to come home. Hey, bye-bye. They're there. They're getting me on the book end of the day. So I'm not going into the debit section on my family and my husbandry as much as a lot of people in my position would have to be. I'm in a very fortunate position. I will tell you this, FaceTime sure as hell helps a lot better than a phone call.
Oh, big time. Yeah. So the whole family goes.
Yeah.
And do they homeschool or do they do school online?
We go school through the school they're in. Work. My wife worked out a program where we could be mobile and still go through the curriculum, zoom back into the classroom, and things like that.
That's phenomenal. That's great. What would you tell your 14-year-old self?
Hey, next year you're going to be in a really hairy situation with this older girl who's going to blackmail you. No, it ain't cool. And you know what? Now you know it's it ain't cool. And good luck. I was talking about this with a friend last night. I've got things that I pulled off or got away with in my years between 14 and 18 that I still wake up in the middle of the night going, oh my God. Damn it, made it out of some pickles, man. Made it out of some situations that if I wouldn't have been ignorant, I wouldn't have made them out of them, I don't think. If I'd have known what I know now, I'd have been too logical about the situation. I would have summed it up and seen how much trouble I was in and probably might have choked. But because I was ignorant, I just blew right through it. And the problem in the situation looked at me and was kind of like, is he blowing right through this? Is he not even giving us the credit? Yeah. So I made it through many situations like that. And it wakes me up to some of my recurring nightmares. And I would say this, don't try and grow up too fast. Because you always, for me, you want to be, whatever your definition of cool is. So Mel, I wanted to be cool, wanted to be a little older. You know, I was 14, I'd hang out with the 16-year-olds, 16, half the 18-year-olds. And that was good. Dated the older girls. You know what I mean? Went over as a sophomore and was dating the senior girl who was dating Mr. Lobo. And all the seniors were like, who's this little prick? Who the hell does he think he is? I'm like, yeah, man. So, but at the same time, don't try to be, it'll come. The time will come. Don't miss out on the years that you are and don't miss out on being able to go, I don't know. I haven't learned that yet. I don't know.
It's okay to not know.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's okay to ask for help.
Yeah.
Thank you. That is all my questions for you. Thank you, Matthew. Thank you. Thank you so much for your time. Thanks for bringing your whole self. Thanks for trusting me. I really enjoyed my time with you.
I enjoyed it with you, Amanda.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you.
That was actor Matthew McConaughey speaking to me via Zoom from Texas. Thank you for listening. And as always, if you like my show, please comment, like, and follow The Conversation with Amanda DiCadene wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts. And as always, you can follow me, Amanda DiCadene, on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. Thanks for listening, and I will see you next week.